Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, super people. Happy Saturday. This is Heather McRae, and you are listening to the Golden Sephora radio program on the Authentic U Radio Network. My name is Heather McRae, and I'm a master's level special educator working as a coach in private practice. This will actually be my last broadcast as Golden Sephora Radio. I am shifting my focus to that which means the most to me, and that is compassion. And the name of my new business model is the Compassionate Process. So next week, I will be hosting the show as the Compassionate Process radio program. Compassionate Process coaching, what I want to say about that is it's time to move away from our old ways of thinking and processing information. We're too small in our visions of ourselves and for ourselves. And compassionate process coaching is designed with the specific purpose of shifting you and your life and your thinking from puny human to superperson. I have spent, really since I was 19 years old and my mother died of cancer, I began my compassionate process, and it has been quite a journey. And lately, because of the influences of some pretty amazing people, and one of them is my producer, Michelle Arbeau. Michelle, are you there?
I wanted to
share some things with our audience. When Michelle invited me to be a host on the show, the two words that meant the most to me when you and I were first talking were, of course, the word authentic, which is a very important word for me. And the other word was shifting. And the name of your radio show, Surviving the Shift, really, really struck me. And I've been thinking about you a lot the last week or so because I feel as if I have shifted so much that I'm not just surviving anymore, I'm thriving and shifting. And you've had a lot to do with that. And I wanted to really thank you for that because your leadership with the Authentic You Network and has allowed me to really embrace my gifts. And I had a really amazing aha moment just a few days ago in terms of connecting with my abilities with clairaudience. And it was so amazing. I don't know if you all know what clairaudience is, but that's one of the gifts that people have, you know, is seeing, hearing, knowing. And this is hearing. And it's basically the experience of, if you've ever done radio or film or anything like that, or seen, you know, movies where you see the CIA guys with earpieces in their ear and somebody talking to them, clairaudience is really getting message from the universe as if you have a receiver in your ear and somebody's just talking to you, just like Michelle talks to me. And I had the most amazing experience of that the other day. And Michelle, I wanted to thank you in front of our listeners because being able to relaunch the show next week as the Compassionate Process, you've had a big thing to do with that, and I wanted to thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I mean, that's what I live for, is to help others see the beauty and their talents and their gifts and what they're really, truly meant to do. And, you know, it's so true. You're talking about the shift and going through the shift, and now all of a sudden you feel like you're not just surviving it, but you're thriving in it. And it's so very true because, you know, last year was like wading through mud, of course, and now 2012, everyone's feeling like they're stepping into greatness. And I actually had someone tweet me about that a few weeks ago, and I thought that is, you know, exactly what we're feeling this year because it's a 5-year, of course, and so we're really feeling that tug to really express ourselves. So this is what the shift has evolved to now, is that we're thriving instead of surviving. So it's so true. Absolutely. You hit it right on the head.
And I think, you know, a big, at least for me, because I can only talk about my experience with it, one of the biggest things that I've been learning about is taking responsibility and not, you know, one of the pieces of living a bigger life has to do with owning the fact that you are bigger, and it's not an ego thing at all. It's a responsibility thing. When you know that you have a gift or you know that you have a talent, it's a responsibility to express it and to share it as a from a place of service. And, you know, as we shift out of ego and into higher consciousness, we have a responsibility to take those gifts and to pay it forward. And Michelle is so good at paying it forward. And I wanted to thank you. And Michelle, I wanted to share with you and our listeners the Path of the Soul Destiny card that came up for everybody today. Because what I do is when I get the cards, it's a Facebook app, and they're by a woman named Cheryl Lee Harnish, and they're just wonderful. And this card came up a couple of weeks ago, but it came up again today, and I think its timing is perfect, and it's the Egyptian Eagle. And what it says is, this is the time to release all your past ideals that no longer serve you, which is exactly what I'm doing by shifting my business model. If you've been doing inner work, this card represents its completion and a shift into the new. If you're just beginning, this card represents that it is time to begin your inner work. As we make these great life shifts, those who were once close seem to drift away. Take time to thank them for the lessons you've shared. Egyptian Eagle offers the higher perspective and viewpoint. And I just wanted to share that with you too, Michelle, because it seems like with your leadership here with Authentic You Media, that's what you're helping all of us to do, is to shift into higher planning. I really honor and appreciate that about you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, I think, you know, I want to take credit for helping or being, you know, some sort of a role model for everyone. I think that we're all being drawn together, and I think the hosts that are joining the network are pieces of the puzzle, and it's like we're joining this circle. I almost want to say a circle, because it feels like we're gathering in a circle, and we're, you know, each person is bringing this new, you know, aspect or quality to the team. So I think it's, you know, I'm just honored and humbled to be the one to gather everyone.
I could not agree more, and I'm so grateful that we get to do this together. As they say, get on with the show, I'd like to bring on a dear friend of mine who is on the air with us all the way from Tokyo, Japan. Konnichiwa, Robert. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
So tell me, Rob, what time is it in Tokyo right now?
Looking at the clock right now, it's about 5 a.m., actually. Yeah, 5 a.m.
So this is an early morning for you. Welcome to the show.
Nice.
How are you?
I'm doing quite all right. It's been a very busy week so far. I've got a lot of stuff going on. Going out of town in about 2 weeks to southern Japan for some training with MMS, and everything's been very, very fast paced over the last several months. I can guarantee that.
So let me ask you, Rob. One of the things that you know, I've been talking on my show a lot lately about with Amy Hart about neurodiversity, and for me, for a quick recap, neurodiversity is, I think, the most compassionate perspective so far that began as a perspective about autism and the autism spectrum. But what I am doing with my work is expanding that to talk about just diversity in general, biodiversity, neurodiversity, human diversity, plant diversity, because really every single being on the planet is unique and different and has gifts. And I thought, what a wonderful opportunity to talk to you as a gay man living in Japan. So I know that you and I spoke briefly a couple of days ago about what a different experience it is for you. So first of all, can you tell the folks a little bit about what you do to make money in the world today?
Okay. Well, I actually work for an organization known as Office Guni Gunasin, and it's kind of like an umbrella organization that works with several different companies, organizations, people that are part of this collective collaboration known as the New Paradigm Network. Example members of like the New Paradigm Network would be like the Golden Pyramid of Peace, which is a 501c3 nonprofit doing charitable works in Japan and in the Philippines, as well as various other places as the need arises. Organizations such as the Modern Mystery School, and that we also have an organization known as the New Paradigm Council. Now, the New Paradigm Network as a whole, the object of it is to go out into the world and find these new technologies that are coming to the surface as science is becoming a little bit more spiritually based and starting looking beyond the vision simply of what we can see in front of our face. and exploring, well, how do we create a sustainable world? How do we impact the environment and impact the healthy living and the empowerment of people throughout the world and creating equality amongst all different people? And so, and it's not just exploring the technologies, because exploring the technologies, so many different people do that. And so what we want to do is we want to find a technology and then actually find a way for us to apply it in our own lives, but also make it affordable and have something that's realistic, something that can actually be applied today. And so what I do is I'm actually the vice president and a creative visionary officer for Office Goonie Goonison. So my job is kind of like to come up with all the crazy ideas of where we can go in the future and look at all the different pieces and try and create a path forward for us so that we can really get our message out there. And then every once in a while they'll rein me back in and say, okay, let's calm down a little bit and see how far we can get today. So, but my job is really about looking towards the future and creating like this visionary aspect as to, okay, well, how can we impact people's lives?
Well, I know based on some of the stuff I've seen on Facebook and online, Rob, you guys are working really, really hard with things like housing that is environmentally completely in harmony, and also with energy. I know that a lot of us in the Modern Mystery School are really, really talking a lot about the work of Nikola Tesla and how his work has been very misunderstood. And he was really working towards free, like a free source of energy for everyone that everyone could tap into, and then was summarily squashed.
Well, Nikola Tesla is a very interesting character, because what Nikola Tesla was experimenting with is what we call DC electric current, which means direct current. And so it basically be, you know, electricity goes from one spot, like point A, to point B. And what ended up being created was the AC electrical system, which we see all throughout the United States and North America. And the idea behind AC is to, like, electricity would go from point A to point B and then from point B to point C and continue on until it got to its final resting space. And the reason everybody chose to go with AC was because it could travel huge long distances, the same energetic current, whereas DC electricity couldn't go quite as far. So what we're discovering is that the actual energy signatures, like if you look at, I'm not sure if I would call it radiation, but think of the idea of radiation as energy radiating outwards. The particles that are being emitted by AC electricity is actually harmful to our health. And whereas the energy that's being released through DC current is not so harmful, and in fact, in most ways, it's actually healthier and helps stabilize the bioelectrical systems within the body. So, and with Nikola Tesla, I know that this is becoming a big topic, and what we're doing with Office Goonie Goonison right now is we're looking at different ways of bringing in renewable energy sources that are affordable that, like, you can actually go out today and purchase and plug into your home. So we have a couple different technologies that we're looking at. Two of them are ready. One of them is in the process of coming. The two that, of course, everybody's heard of, solar power, probably one of the most common forms of energy that exist. The problem is the price. And what we're noticing is manufacturers are actually lowering the price significantly, so we're looking for the places to get that at a cheap rate. And the other technology that is in existence right now is something that's called piezoelectric technology. And not many people have heard about this. And basically the idea is that you have a kind of like on the floor, you would have a square section. And in that square section is a bunch of quartz crystals. And when you step on it, the pressure that you create, the kinetic energy from the pressure of your footstep will actually generate electricity. And, for example, one of the best uses of this technology that we found is that there is, of course, I live in Tokyo, and there are 36 million people who are living in Tokyo. And at one of the train stations, the actual Tokyo train station, underneath all of the gate tickets, they have this piezoelectric technology installed. And so the entire station is actually powered by people simply walking in and out of the station, because they have about 20 million people go through it every day. And so these are sources of energy that we're trying to find a way to bring into the home. You know, like imagine walking into your home and having the entire floor of your home powered through piezoelectric technology. So simply by being in your house, you know, cooking dinner, walking around, you're actually generating electricity that your home can use. And it's completely renewable as long as you continue moving. So this kind of harnessing energy in creative ways is quite powerful.
And that's really important, because one of the things that I've heard Gutni talk about, even in Modern Mystery School, in initiate meetings, is that our job is to help bring equality and equanimity to everybody, and power in both the literal sense and the figurative sense is a big deal, because, you know, if the large corporations are managing all of the power and it's something that we could have access to ourselves, then it makes more sense that everybody should get what they need.
Yes, I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, there is certainly a huge disproportionate amount of inequality throughout the world. A lot of it's based off of religious dogmas. You also have, sexual orientation is a big issue out there. Racial discriminations. But one of the biggest things that we're seeing, especially in the U.S. right now, you know, if you follow politics, is the idea of financial inequality. So trying to even the playing field a little bit by providing ways for people to reduce bills and to actually be able to afford things in their life that are not only environmentally friendly, but long-lasting, can have a huge impact on lessening the inequality gap that exists today.
Yep, I totally agree with you. Now, Rob, one of the things we talked about that I'm really excited for you to share with our listeners is that you and I are both gay, and living in Canada, I'm really blessed having moved home, because gay marriage is legal in Canada. Gay couples have the same rights as everybody else, as it should be. But what is your experience in Japan as a gay man right now?
Well, Japan is a very interesting culture, especially from my point of view, having come from the United States, because the Japanese culture is almost opposite of what it is in the United States, opposite in the way that the society is structured, that the way that the culture runs, the beliefs that the people hold, the traditional values that exist. Within Japan, there's a very hierarchical kind of structure, where everybody has a specific place in society, and based upon your place within society, the class that you are at, certain responsibilities and certain expectations are placed upon you. And it's a very traditional society, so there almost seems to be, especially concerning sexuality in general, not just homosexual behavior, but heterosexual as well, there's a taboo on sexuality, where it's not necessarily bad to do it. However, it is it's not okay to talk about it. It's one of those things that's unseen, that you don't really want to admit that you do. It's just sort of kind of like an unmentionable kind of item. So within my experiences here, it's quite different, because I used to live in Atlanta, Georgia, which, if anybody ever follows, I believe it was Out Magazine. It could have been Advocate Magazine. It was actually recently, within the past year or two, named as the gayest city in the United States. They have a huge homosexual population there, a huge pride festival, and everybody's out and open about it. We even have our Ground Zero with the Outright Bookstore, which is a gay bookstore. And so everybody's
right.
Comfortable with the idea. They're getting used to it. And here in Japan, it's kind of interesting, because I come here, and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, everybody's back in the closet. There's not a whole lot of security in your own image and who you are and your knowledge of yourself, concerning every aspect of life, not just sexuality. But there's the kind of idea that I've experienced here where, rather than being genuine for the most part, you kind of remain hidden because you have to follow the norms and expectations that are placed upon you by cultural values. So it's certainly been a bit of a bender for me trying to assimilate myself into a society that functions in such a way.
Has it been, Rob, are you saying that, like, even straight couples, you won't see hand-holding in public or anything like that?
It depends on what parts of the city that you go in or what parts of the country that you go in. For example, there are parts that are, I guess you could call them more hip or more socially acceptable, and those are usually the areas that are have a larger population of the younger generation, because it certainly
sure.
seems like the younger generation is becoming more open-minded and trying to overthrow this traditional caste system. But for the most part, you'd be kind of surprised to see that. You'll see couples walking around, but like public displays of affection or holding hands or anything of that nature is generally kept to the bedrooms.
So having lived in Atlanta for 10 years myself, I mean, gay clubs were out in the open. It was no big deal, all that stuff. You were telling me that the gay clubs are hidden in Tokyo?
It's quite an interesting phenomenon. I hope I don't get in trouble for sharing this. So the way that it works in Tokyo You have the whole city of Tokyo, and it's actually more of a region, and they actually do have the city center, just like most cities in the United States. And within the city,
right.
there are different kind of districts. The two most famous ones are Shibuya and Shinjuku. You know, everybody's seen the movie with the camera pointing down on the street with all the Japanese people crossing thousands of them at a time, and that's in Shibuya.
Sure.
And so another area in Tokyo is known as Shinjuku, and what they actually have there is like an underground gay culture. And they have, you know, gay establishments and, you know, the coffee bars or clubs and things like this. And you won't actually know about them unless you're told about them, because they're not marketed or advertised. And a lot of them you actually can't find unless you're invited and brought there by another person.
So that almost sounds like the U.S. in like the 50s and 60s, you know, before Stonewall, where everything was hidden and, you know, if you wanted to get together with the...
I can certainly see a lot of examples of the MacArthur era, you know, especially with at the end of World War II, with General MacArthur coming in and reshaping the Japanese government system. I can certainly see a lot of, like you said, 1950s U.S. kind of style systems here, but completely taken over and customized by the Japanese, of course. You know, their culture is completely present, but I do see a lot of policies and ideas that would have existed, you know, decades ago in the United States.
So, Tamir, you were telling me, based on your experience, what are the Japanese people's attitudes towards Americans, just based on your, again, I'm not trying to ruffle any feathers, but if we do, that's okay, because it creates dialogue. What has been your experience of the Japanese perspective on Americans?
Well, here's the interesting thing with interacting with Japanese people, is that because they live in a culture that does have a hierarchy and does have social roles that you fit into, depending upon your economic status, your job status, your family's history, all of these different things, you're expected to fit into this role. And so you're expected to behave in particular ways. You say certain things, you don't say other things. And so when it actually comes to having a Japanese person that I don't know personally and very well express an opinion or some sort of idea concerning a question such as, you know, what would their perspective on Americans be, I'm actually not going to hear that, because they're not going to tell me what their opinion is. They tend to keep these things hidden and secret, and they don't talk about it, because that would be going outside the tradition of culture and outside what is expected and what is even allowed within normal everyday conversation between two strangers. Now, I do know there from some Japanese friends that I have here, and that, you know, I do know very well, that the general perspective of the Americans is either the typical foreign perspective of Americans as being loud and arrogant and a little bit obnoxious, or,
sure.
As I've experienced with some Japanese, they view Americans as, you know, the freedom. You know, it's like, oh, they're living a lifestyle that I could never live, that I want to live, you know, where I can actually express myself. And I usually find that that viewpoint is definitely within the younger generations in Japan, where they view, like, and it's ironic, because if you actually see American TV shows that do make it to Japan, it's never any of that wholesome family kind of style TV show. It's always like MTV or something with wild parties and things like that, where it really doesn't show our best side to the world.
Right.
But even that being said, it's just the idea of being able to do what you want without having the fear of reprimand, which I do see attracts a lot of attention from younger Japanese people.
So there's a big fear of reprimand or consequences if you go against the norm and all that stuff, which is very much like U.S. culture in the 60s.
Hmm. Well, and I don't know if I would be qualified to actually call it fear, because I can't quite, you know, I can't go directly inside of their heads and determine what it is that they're thinking.
Oh, no, I understand.
But it's just, it's tradition. And it's the culture that you don't do certain things. So I'm not sure if it's so much fear as much as it is indoctrination.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. Have you Have you noticed what effect that you are having on the Japanese around you? Have you changed people's perspectives on anything, especially as a gay man? Has anybody kind of, excuse me, given what you've told me about kind of how hidden everything is, have you noticed that you're, you know, as light-filled as you are, have you noticed that that's having an effect on the Japanese people around you and that they're opening up to you more?
Well, the irony is, like, with the Japanese people that I, you know, my friends here, when I go out with them and everything like that, at the very beginning, it was very much based upon the traditional cultures of what would be expected within Japan. And obviously, at that point in time, I didn't know anything about the Japanese culture. I didn't understand why they would say certain things or why they would act certain ways. And I was trying to kind of the full immersion effect, where you just throw yourself into a culture and hope that you survive. And
yeah. I understand.
While I was doing that, they started seeing me from my American culture, and I was seeing them from their Japanese culture. And sort of what the relationship turned into is, as part of me being an American, as part of me being, you know, from the U.S., and but more importantly, as part of me being, you know, a student and an initiate within the Modern Mystery School, there is something that is very sacred to me about the idea of knowing who you are and having the courage to, not only the courage, but being aware of your responsibility to express that and be completely
right.
honest and genuine about that, you know, truly stepping into who you are as a person and discovering who you are as a person through the process of going along the journey to be able to do that. And they certainly saw that within myself. And you know, I've even had some of them comment on that to me about the fact that, like, I'm always very, very pointed about, when I say something, I want to be genuine. I don't want to beat around the bush. I want to get to the point. You know, if I'm going to spend my time building a relationship with someone, whether it's a friendship or, you know, a love interest or anything like that, I actually want to invest in the relationship, and that requires me to be completely honest. And so what they saw was me acting like this, and they reciprocated by actually starting to open up and starting to trust me and allowing me to get inside of this, I guess you'd call it facade of what they're presenting to everybody else.
Sure.
And simply because I wasn't following the rules that they thought were rules.
God, that's so great that you've been able to have that experience over there. I can't thank you enough for being with us today. It feels like this half hour has just flown by, and I appreciate you being willing to get up in the, you know, before the butt crack of dawn. To be on the radio with us today, Rob, and I send you light and love, and I thank you for being my brother of spirit, and I love you very much, and I hope you have a great day. Thank you, Super People, for joining us today. I will be relaunching the show next week as the Compassionate Process radio program. Until then, I wish you light and love and all the best for your highest good. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.